Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome to this week's episode of Right Here in Mass. Joining me today is Matt Abramovitz, who's the president of NEPM, joining it back in 2022. Matt has had a successful three-decade career in media, spanning positions at WBGO, Sirius Satellite Radio, and New York Public Radio. Matt, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to having you on and having you talk more about yourself and what you do. So feel free to dive right in.
Well, as you said, I'm the president of NEPM. I like to also point out that's New England Public Media, and that's the joined forces of both the local TV and local radio here in Western Mass. And so our mission really is to serve our region here in Western Mass with programming that inspires community, civility, and curiosity. So that's what I'm here to do every day.
I love it. And kind of rewinding back to when you first started your career in media, what inspired you to actually want to join the industry and have your job focused around that?
There were two things. First of all, I had an uncle who was working in radio here in New England. He worked in Worcester and he worked in Boston and he worked in Hartford. And he was like a classic rock and top 40 jock named Jeremy Savage. And I once visited his station and I thought it was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen, was inside a radio station. And separately, I was into music and I was kind of getting an interest in jazz. And so between those two things, I just knocked on the door of my local jazz station in New Jersey and offered and asked if I could be an intern for the summer when I was leaving high school. And they said yes. And that kind of gave me the bug. I kind of never looked back. So it was kind of both a little bit of inspiration because I knew it looked like a cool thing to do. And then I just found that something about the immediacy and intimacy of radio was really attractive to me. And I felt, and I liked the people I worked with.
And so when you started at WBGO, what led you to then kind of moving on in your career? You've had, it seems like, four positions now, perhaps.
Probably more, but four that I usually talk about. there are a couple of detours along the way. Like at one point, I decided that I couldn't make a career in broadcasting. And so I wanted to go for the big money. And so I entered a PhD program for history, which was a really amazing experience. And I learned so much that I still reference in lots of different ways, but obviously not the path to big money. So I learned that. But when I got back into broadcasting, I had a few different things as a freelancer, but then I landed a full-time job at Sirius Satellite Radio when it was a new startup. And so it wasn't really until I had that experience where I did something that I think is good for everybody to do when they're at that point in their career, which is to say, you know, if I'm getting into something new, I want to give myself 2 to 3 years to get good at it and see, because mm-hmm. it takes that long to really know if it's the right career, if you're going to be successful. And that's kind of what I decided to do, was to say, you know, I don't know if this thing's even going to fly, but I'm going to give it 2 to 3 years to see if it works and see if I can be the best at it. I don't know if I ever got to be the best, but I had a good time and I did some work that I really am still proud of. So I worked there for a while. And then Sirius Satellite Radio was born at a time when there were actually two satellite radio companies. This is really boring history, but you know, I used to study history, so I care about these things. But the government was concerned that there'd be a satellite monopoly. And so they created a enforced duopoly of Sirius Satellite Radio with a satellite radio license and XM Radio. One was based in New York, XM was based in DC. In and around 2008, the two companies finally merged because it was becoming clear that it was not viable to have two companies at that scale operating what they had to do. And like a lot of people at that point, I lost my job in the merger when those two companies came together. And I landed at WNYC, New York Public Radio, with what ended up being kind of a largely dead-end job in operations. But then one day, out of the blue, they announced that they had bought a classical station, the WQXR, the classical station that had belonged to the New York Times for more than 60 years. And they needed to build it out from scratch at the new WNYC studios. And I knew how to do that from all my years of building stations at satellite radio. And so I raised my hand, and that's kind of how I got started there.
Very interesting. And so now, since you were in like the New York and New Jersey area, what brought you to Massachusetts?
Well, I mean, honestly, the opportunity to work here. I didn't have a huge connection to Western Mass. I'd gone to school at college in Middletown, Connecticut at Wesleyan. And I'd spent my summers in the Berkshires at summer camp. But I liked so much of the diversity of the region. I mean, you know, I think if Western Mass is one thing, it's not one thing, right? I mean, you have cities, you have rural areas and mountains, you have lots of different diversity of folks and viewpoints. And that was really attractive to me. Mm-hmm. And what I loved from a professional perspective was that throughout my career, I had been really involved in a lot of big changes, right? The build out of satellite radio, creating a public station out of the Heritage Classical Station in New York. And New England Public Media was this relatively new merger between the local TV station, WGBY, and the local NPR affiliate, New England Public Radio. And the merger had happened in late 2019. And so they were just starting to have like conversations about the logos when the pandemic struck. And so it was a team that was really craving new leadership and kind of a way to kind of get out of that first difficult phase of a merger and kind of really think about who we want to be as a newly united organization. And so what I saw there was the ability to have a huge impact with a company that did great work with great people and had a community that was intrinsically interesting. And I think there's so much opportunity out here in Western Mass that's usually under-discovered. So that's one of the reasons that I wanted to come.
Yeah, that's what I was chatting about during our episode with Monty and Khalees, is just the incredible organizations and people that they've helped to bring awareness to all throughout Western Mass. And because it's such a huge area of the state and there's so much going on that people just don't know about. So I think it's really great work that NEPM and its shows are really doing to help bring that to light ultimately.
Yeah, I think that, I think the biggest strategic change that I've made since I started was to say to anyone who will listen that we are going to be by, for, and about Western Mass. This is a region with a lot of amazing things happening, a strong local pride and a clear identity, and really, really wanted to embrace that. And I know if you live in Boston, you know, once you get past 495, people think, oh, you know, the RB Dragons, like it's just, they don't even know what's out there, except maybe Tanglewood. I think what Monty and Khalees are is really on this amazing adventure to discover mm-hmm. all of the riches of Western Mass. And some of the stories are inspiring. Some of them are really heartrending. And, you know, there's a whole range of experiences out here. And what I love about the work that they do, and I think the spirit that they brought to the team, is that they are curious to hear all of it and they want to share it all. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of, you know, public media at its best is inspired by a curiosity about the world around you and trying to make sense of it for the time that we've got.
Absolutely. Would you say that it was challenging moving to Western Mass, only really knowing the Berkshires and getting in this position? Did you find that it kind of led to any struggles with not knowing the community totally well yet? Or how would you say that worked out for you?
I think moving for any job is tough. For anybody. And the first few months I was kind of spending the weeks here and then going home to Brooklyn, on weekends, and I've got a little kid. So it was challenging for my family to be apart like that. I think that the biggest difference for me was coming from New York City and moving up to, Western Mass is kind of embracing car culture. When I lived in New York, I'd walk everywhere. I'd walk to the grocery store. I'd ride a bike to see a friend, that kind of thing. And here folks are in their cars, which means that they don't always see as many people, and there's not as much kind of face-to-face interaction with your neighbors. And so your sense of place, which is so much more than just the architecture and the roads, but it's about the people you see on a regular basis, was a little harder for me to crack. It was harder for me to build those routines. So I don't know if that's unique to Western Mass. I think that's just part of the part and parcel of moving for any job.
Yes. And one thing that you had shared in your bio that will be in our, the show notes for our listeners, is that you live in a co-housing community. And I feel like that kind of ties in with what you were just chatting about, which I think is so interesting. I've never heard of that before. And then I looked it up and I was like, wow, that's a really cool concept. And I can imagine that that probably helped you with just getting to know the people around you and know your neighbors and become familiar with the area.
All right, so this is where I get to do a little pitch for co-housing. I will say that I'm relatively new to co-housing. We spent about a year and a half in other housing situations, bouncing around. But co-housing is a Scandinavian concept where you're not on a kibbutz farming. You are not in a shared kitchen with a bunch of roommates. You all have your own house, but you've built those homes in an intentional community, often around a common house where people gather and kind of do a lot of socializing. So the idea is that you are creating a sense of community with where you live, and you're kind of building the infrastructure to see your neighbors and to engage with them and be connected to them, their lives, in a way that you wouldn't if you just pulled into your garage and walked up to your house and didn't see anybody. One of the couple things I like about it is that there are community meals twice a week. And so as a parent with little kids, it's so relieving to know that I don't have to cook tonight. And we just walk down and we see neighbors and we get to talk to grownups and our kids talk to kids. And it's built in a pedestrian area. So the parking lots are kind of set aside so that you always are walking up to your house and you kind of have a little bit of this, almost like in a very teeny weeny little way, a life of the street. So you see neighbors and you get to wave to them. And it also means that for your kids, it's safe to walk around because there's there's farms and gardens and chickens, and your kids can just wander around and know that they're not in any real danger. So I really enjoy having that intentionality around wanting to see other people and connecting with neighbors. And that's and I think that's very on brand for Western Mass, actually, that one of the things that people value out here is that you can find a lifestyle that is suited to you. And there's a lot of different paths to that.
Absolutely. I feel like I had only probably gone to Western Mass maybe once or twice until probably the past year or so. I was chatting about this with Monty and Khalees, but I will be getting married at Valley View Farm in Williamsburg.
Oh,
or Haydenville, I guess. Thank you. Yeah. But I feel like we were chatting about that and how it's just so nice that anywhere you go, I feel like in Western Mass, like especially a community like that, everyone's so welcoming, everyone's so inviting. And it's just almost feels like a different change of pace. I feel like for me personally, the South Shore where I am is very hustle and bustle and whatnot. And it's so nice to kind of go out there and instantly feel a sense of relaxation and like rejuvenation. And you can really kind of take a step back, which I think is great.
Yeah. And when I go back to New York and I ride the train, that's one of those things I'm like, I don't miss doing this every day.
Yeah.
There's something about the schlep of New York that, that is quite wearing. And so I think that, there's something about Western Mass that, you know, you have this, there can be some hustle, but there's also like a lot of more space to enjoy. And especially if you like being outdoors and taking in nature, there's so many great opportunities to kind of really unplug.
Absolutely. And so with your role as president for NEPM, what are some of the things that you've had the opportunity to work on? I know you mentioned a few changes that have come since you came on in 2022, but what are some exciting things that you've really had the opportunity to dabble in that you've enjoyed?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as the president of the company, you know, my main job is to keep things coming along and keep the company afloat and kind of build to the future and lay out a clear vision of who we are and what we're trying to achieve in the community. And so a lot of the work that I had done in the past of, you know, making shows and putting on live events, you know, is now the work of other folks. But I'm really proud of bringing on Monty and Kalise, and they're building out this the fabulous 413. When I hear their best work, I'm hearing people and stories that I would completely be hidden to me. Folks that they just are able to get onto the show and draw them out. And I'm learning about the community. I'm hearing perspectives that I didn't hear necessarily. And so of all the things that I've done, I mean, that's one of the things that is right at the top, because they have brought so much joy and enthusiasm and curiosity to what we do. And I'm really quite proud of their work. I think that we've got a great newsroom that with some outstanding reporters and producers, and they've done, you know, they always do exceptional reporting. And I think their work is balanced and trustworthy and really admirable. And we have a great music service, you know, between Classical and EPM, which we've kind of recently broken off as its own network, a 24/7 service, and our jazz programming every night on FM. I just think there's a lot there. And that's all on top of the wonderful PBS program. So, I mean, I think there's like, I think the thing about that, that's hard about that question is that you're asking me to like pick a favorite child. but the reality is what NEPM brings into the world, or you know, can bring into the world, is really an embarrassment of riches. And I'm really kind of blown away by all the things that we cover each day.
Absolutely. I love that. Why would you say it's important for our communities to prioritize public radio, and why people should continue to advocate for the importance of it?
Well, I mean, I think that you don't have to look very far to know that journalism that informs you is hard to come by these days in your local community. Like, you've heard stories about the death of the newspaper, and that is totally real. And there's something is lost when we don't all share good information about what's going on in the world around us. We did, the first year I was here, we did something called a listening tour, where we worked with Mass Inc. Polling, and we had gone out to several different communities and held these listening sessions, and we did a quantitative study as well. And one of the things that percolated to the top was that people felt like they didn't know what was going on in their communities. Like, they were getting stuff on listservs and Patch and Facebook and a little bit from the local papers, but it wasn't complete. And so, you know, there might be a farmer's market over there, or a museum opening or gallery opening over here. And just, it was completely lost to them. They felt like they didn't have the connections to one another that they craved. I think public media is the last locally owned, operated, and governed media companies in the country. And so, you know, you think about, you know, you probably, when you want to check the news, you might click on a Boston Globe or New York Times app. You might listen to music through Spotify. Those companies don't care what's happening in Western Mass, right? Except that whether their users are coming by, you know, they have a different business model. And our business model is that we create a product that is resonant with our community and is valuable to them. And then voluntarily they pay to support it. And so, like, our whole job is to be in touch with our community and make the connections that we think, and I still believe, people need to have a sense of community and a sense of purpose.
Definitely. That reminds me of one of the things I was chatting about with Monty and Kalise, is that some of the shows that they've done and the people and organizations that they featured have brought incredible results to those people or to those businesses or whoever it might be. And that was one of the things that really stood out to me as being one of the biggest benefits of public media or public radio, with just being able to, like you said, make those connections and help people discover things that they might not have found out about otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to me in a really, like, small but meaningful way. My mother was visiting, and she had some mobility issues. And I remember hearing a piece that there was art in the orchard in East Hampton with a special accessibility feature where they would drive you around in a golf cart if you weren't able to walk and go through the orchard and see the art. And so that was like, I was like, oh, I know what we're going to do this weekend. Because it was, and so it was one of those things that I would never have known about. It wouldn't have been in the paper. It wouldn't have come up in my feed. It was just a thing that I'd heard Monty and Kalise talking about. And it's in those small ways that, you know, I can be grateful that they're there looking out for me and my family in this kind of very, like, not in a big way, but just a way that has made me a better community member because I'm taking part in the public life of Western Mass.
Yes, definitely. Where do you see NEPM going in the next year or even additional years down the line in terms of expansion or new things it might be offering or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know if you follow a lot of this, but the media world is going through quite a bit of an upheaval right now. So I would not want to predict like too far out at this point. But I think that, we've planted our flag for Western Mass and we're going to keep developing our brand around serving this community. A lot of that will be focused on things like Monte and Calice, where, you know, we might add video or have events that kind of help kind of bring their work to more people in more different ways. I think that we're excited to explore the ways that we can be even more kind of digitally focused because, you know, what we're finding is that if we want to reach people, we got to reach them on their phones because fewer and fewer people are turning on their clock radios every morning to wake themselves up. So we're trying to find ways of taking the content that we normally make for a radio broadcast and make it more accessible for your phones. So part of that is kind of a digital transformation. And then I think the other piece of this is really thinking hard about, you know, where are there audience opportunities, folks who aren't getting NPR or PBS yet and might enjoy it, and where, how do we make sure it's on their radar? And so some of that is about getting to know our community even better. And obviously investing in the kind of journalism that that's so key to, again, sewing a community together.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that I was just thinking about that you mentioned of reaching the right people who'd be looking for something like public radio or NEPM is that Western Mass is so big. You have Springfield and then you have the Berkshires, which is like an hour to an hour and a half away from Springfield. And so since it spans such a large area, that was one thing I was wondering is if it's been a challenge to kind of reach the whole breadth or depth of the area with those people, or if you might notice certain locations having a more in-depth radio, like listener section compared to others.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is a challenge because it is such a big and diverse community. And I think that we have a kind of a disproportionate number of members from Hampshire County, which is Northampton, Amherst area, which are college towns. And that's kind of a place where public media has tended to shine. We're obviously interested in kind of serving the breadth of Western Mass as best we can. What that means is that we're consciously trying to include stories from those areas, for example. So, we have a weekly show called The Rundown, which has kind of local journalists talking about the key stories of the week. And we often have somebody from the Berkshire Eagle coming to talk. We have folks covering downtown Springfield. I mean, there's a range of areas that we cover. And, you know, ultimately, the quality of that work rests on referrals. It's like anything, you know, if somebody's willing to share a story or tell their friend that something they heard or saw with NEPM, that's really what gets the word out. So we broadcast to all those areas, but it's really our success in inspiring someone to share it and tell their friends about it that really will determine how effective we are at serving the whole community.
That's a great point, because I feel like it's one of those things where, for example, I'm thinking of Chronicle. That's something I watch a lot, where I'll find a business in Chronicle or a fun area, and then I'll say that to someone, to my parents or my friends, I discovered such and such through Chronicle. And I feel like that's probably a similar situation for NEPM. If someone hears or sees something through the public media, then they might be more apt to share it with the people who are closest to them, and just naturally you'll find that spreading that way.
Yeah, and that's true in the podcasting space too, which may be interesting to you. That one of the greatest ways of getting someone to listen is to have a friend tell them to do it, right? So those kinds of referrals really are worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely. And earlier you had mentioned Spotify and how people listen to streaming services like that, and made a great point about Spotify not necessarily caring about the listeners or where they are and what they want to learn about. Do you find that that's a challenge or a struggle that you go through with NEPM, with people just kind of wanting to stick to their streaming and not necessarily focus more on public radio, if that makes sense?
I think in general, there's more there are more options for a consumer when it comes to watching or listening than ever before, right? So the hours of the day that you spend with, listening to music probably haven't changed that much, but your choices of where to find it have expanded exponentially. So I think it's a challenge for any public media organization to think about kind of how do you differentiate yourself. And one of the things that I always come back to is the human touch that you get. That I find the streaming services, for example, very convenient but not very exciting. Like they're a little bit more of like going to the grocery store instead of going to a restaurant. I'm not being taken care of. I'm just getting the things I need. And so what I think that radio and TV can do so well is that by curating our best material for people all the time, and that's kind of really our core strength, we build a relationship with them where they say, I don't have to think about this, but I just like what they choose. And it fills my cup with things that are interesting and inspiring and informative. And that's what I'm really here for.
Absolutely. And I can imagine that listener feedback likely drives a lot of what you do in terms of what you might feature or programs that you might start offering.
I mean, 1,000%. Our I think we rely so much on our audience, and everything that we do is kind of driven by how they behave and what they say they do. I mean, ultimately, you hear those pledge drives where we talk about tote bags and matching opportunities and all that stuff. And that is the ultimate way that members show their interest and support by putting some dollars behind what we do and how we've served them over the months and years. And we always track for data on social media and emails that come in, and all kind of like goes into a stew of learning who our audiences are and what makes them happy.
Yes. And I can imagine with that too, that there probably have been instances before where something that you weren't sure how it was going to be perceived or what the feedback would be like ended up doing really well just from things and being able to kind of dabble into something new.
Yeah, I mean, even just yesterday, somebody was telling me, at first I really didn't like Monty and Khalees, which most people don't like change. She said, but it's really grown on me, and I love it when they really are great, when they're both talking equally and they're a great team together. So I think that people say they want to try new things often, they love consistency. And so changes has been challenging, but I think with anything, whether it's even getting folks to use the new classical NEPM service, which was a little bit of a change from our how we presented classical music before, it was a little bit of a learning curve. But I think once we hit that, we're seeing good results.
Absolutely. That's one thing that just made me think of that too, is just kind of getting people used to change. When they're used to something for so long and doing the same thing for years, it can be challenging when they now have to do it differently. And I remember from my conversation with Monty and Khalees that something that they experienced is that they have a very non-traditional approach to their show. And I think they said that they had taken over like a classical music spot or something like that. And so getting people to kind of adjust to that change and kind of realize that it's a really great thing, I think can be kind of a struggle sometimes.
For sure. One of the things that so just to rewind again, me the historian, NEPM was like a lot of public radio stations playing news and talk, and then a big middle of an overnight music and evenings. So it was news and then classical and then news and then jazz and then classical again. And that was a pretty predominant way of presenting public, that was a kind of public media programming from the 80s and early 90s. And then over the last 20 years, it's really started to change. And so we hadn't done that change yet. And so it was a big leap of faith to make NEPM all news and talk through the day and jazz at night, because it was a big change in the community that it just had this thing for so long. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the other hand, we had a lot of data that showed that people were leaving the station during the day because they didn't listen to classical music. It's not that they didn't like it, or it's not that they thought classical music wasn't for them, but it was just that it wasn't the thing they wanted when they pressed the button for news and talk. And so we already knew that that was an issue. And when we did make the change, there was a lot of outcry initially. But what surprised me is that people would see me on the street, and some, you know, people would recognize me somewhere. And they said, I just have to thank you for making that change, because now I can just keep listening all day long. Mm-hmm. And so it was a leap of faith, but it was one that was informed by a lot of data that showed that audiences audiences were leaving the station when classical music was on and then coming back for news and talk.
Interesting. And so I think that's a great approach that you take, is just really being able to take those things into consideration and making sure that you're always providing people within Western Mass with what they're really looking for and what they'd want to get out of listening to from public radio.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, the results have been really encouraging, and it's early days. But I think that we're definitely heading in the right direction, and it's opened up some opportunities for things like the Rundown with Carrie Saldo and for Monty and Kalise, to be more integrated into what we do. And I think one of the things that we were able to say with real clarity on the radio side was that we were NPR and local perspective for Western Mass. And having that clear branding, it really just says what we're about and who we're for. Mm-hmm. And I think that that really has been galvanizing for the team.
Absolutely. Matt, as we get closer to the end of the show, one of my favorite questions to ask our guests is what their favorite local businesses are to support. So I'm curious to hear the places that you love to frequent throughout Western Mass, especially being somewhat new to the area.
Right. There's a bunch. Though not technically a business, we've done work fundraising with the Food Bank of Western Mass, and I'm a donor to them. So I think they do tremendous work here in the area. So I just wanted to put in a plug for the Food Bank. On a personal basis, let's see. I have a soft spot for Provisions, which is near me, and that's a local wine and liquor store. And I think they've got a great selection. And there used to be a bakery right here in downtown Springfield. They've been closed for a few months, and I'm afraid that they're not coming back. But Granny's Baking Table used to have outstanding pastries and beignets on Fridays and Saturdays that were they were just amazing. Let's see. I guess I would say that, like, the next place I spend most of my time and money is probably the Big Y.
That's a good one. I actually had someone say BJ's, and so I didn't realize that BJ's was local, but you can't go wrong with a grocery store, that's for sure.
Yeah. I know there's, like, I'm going to think of 10 other businesses that I want to give credit to as soon as we get off, but those are the first few that come to mind.
I love it. Matt, thank you so much for coming on today's show. I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further. And also, if you'd like to share how they can support any PM, please feel free to do so.
Sounds good. You can reach me at matt@nepm.org. And supporting your local public radio station is one of the things that makes you feel connected to the community, and it feels great doing your part. And you can find a big fat donate button at our website, nepm.org.
Perfect. Thank you again, Matt. And I will put all of those links in the show notes that our listeners can click through and connect with you from there.
I appreciate it, Ashley. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.